Anyway, 10 years ago, I was on the Worship Associates Committee, and Dawn Sangre was the minister. And at that time, she mentioned that someone in Mount Kisco Fellowship had suggested a service, a panel discussion about to tell about someone you love who has made a significant effect on your life. And I was very interested in doing this, so it's mine now. I have it. It's been associated with me ever since, because I was interested in doing it, and it's, you know, so. Anyway, it is very interesting to do it. So today we have five panelists, five individuals who would like to talk about someone they love who's made a significant effect on their lives. And we have Kevin Dart and Kathy Van Horn, Bob Chavron, Linda, not Ingrid. Ingrid Smith couldn't be here, so Susan is going to read her talk, and then George Confliglio is going to be the last one. So I will turn it over to them, and you will come up. Kevin first.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. I may be slightly off topic, but this time, I wouldn't have written this if I had to read on the 12th, because, well, I decided to start talking about love with my family to get an idea of what direction I would go in, how I would talk, and it just got deeper, and there's so much to say, and one idea was just to start writing down things that I loved, you know, and people I loved and why I loved them. But this is what happened. This is why I'm wearing my jersey today, because I love the New York Mets. I love the feeling. Sorry, this is I love the feeling of that love being passed down from my father to me. It's one of the fatherly son bonds that I have with him. My father, being an immigrant from England, came here in the 80s and naturally started following the local sports team that didn't have the annoying announcer, which is the reason why. And my mother came from Brooklyn. So her dad was a Brooklyn Dodgers fan, and they were National League. And so it would be sacrilege to support the Bronx Bombers. But I love the hope a new baseball season provides every year. I love that feeling. And I'm probably so hopeful and happy of it right now because it's the beginning of the season and not the end of a Mets season. But and I love the look of a beautiful, vast outfield on a Mother's Day. Or any other day, but specifically, I went there with Lucas when he was just short of two, and still floored me. I've seen baseball fields before, but on that day, it was just greener than ever, and you know, I was with my mother, and it was gorgeous. I yearned for that first broadcast. The sound of the announcers and the stadium and the people, it just buries the winter for me. So maybe I love spring. And it's just a sign of spring for me. But I love the saying, you gotta believe. I love, you know, the believing that comes just before you want something to happen and then it actually does. Sports provides that for me. At least this baseball team did. But, you know, there comes the letdown and the sadness and the devastating pain and the stages of grief, especially in younger years. I love learning to let go and start anew. Looking back, because the Mets have been a common thread, and I only played baseball until I was 12 years old, And then I played softball when I got older, you know. It's always been there. You know, I was a senior in high school when the Yankees beat the Mets, and that was a massive learning experience for a boy that age. And, you know, it built, you know, you wear that hat and you know you're advertising to the world, this is where I come from. And somebody else wears a Yankee hat and you're like, all right, that's where you come from. And, you know, but now I have it's a new season and a new hope. It's my Star Wars reference. And I have new reasons to love the Mets, and those are my two sons. And I've already brought Lucas to games. We even brought Noah to a game. He was far too young, in Alina's opinion. We went to a game, and it was totally sold out, and we were up high, and I was very comfortable, and she wasn't. And we walked around, and the people there were so nice, and they offered us to sit somewhere else, and it was just a sweet day anyway. But my son loves baseball he loves the stadium because of the ice cream, you know? And I'm out in the backyard and tossing him a ball and he's smacking it. And, you know, it doesn't matter what he does, when he does something that he's happy doing and I'm just engaging with him, it's just an easy way to just share a moment. You know, he used to call the sport of baseball the Mets. He's like, you know, so I had my own ice cream helmet for many, many years. I used to put on my stuffed animals' heads and from Shea Stadium. But he tells me, you know, all the time, he's like, Daddy loves the Mets. And, you know, have you ever seen the movie Fever Pitch with Jimmy Fallon? And he's a Boston Red Sox fan, and he meets a woman, they start dating, and it's off-season. And then baseball season starts, and he's a fanatic. And she's like, you're a completely different person. Well, I'm probably closer to him than I am to most people that aren't baseball fans. But I never thought I was that type of guy. But I dated Alina, and she asked me how much I love sports and how much I like sports. And I was like, yeah, I like sports, you know, whatever. And then sports started, and I was like, well, I'd really like to, but the game is on. It's a really important game right now. But having kids, you know, and seeing them come in and, you know, and other sports too, turning off that game and just going somewhere with your kid when a game is on was a relieving feeling for me too. You know, nighttime I don't have to worry too much with baseball, which is great, but, you know, Sundays, soccer, and my son wants to go somewhere. When I turn that off and I leave with them, like, that's a victory in my life, you know? So every year, 29 of the 30 teams don't win the World Series. When I was three, the 1986 Mets were the bad guys that won the whole thing, and I have no recollection of it in real time. But my dad does tell me that I was jumping up and down with everyone else. You know, with love can come pain and heartbreak, but there's no reason to sever ties with something that I love just because it doesn't do what I want it to do. I accept the imperfection. I also know what baseball's place is in my life. It doesn't define me. But they surf the game and the sport, and it provides a place of comfort and relaxation and familiarity at times. Intense passion. The study of watching the human body in real time. I mean, real life, live. Man meets physics, and just when you're there, and you know, when I bought this jersey years ago, this was a player, Matt Harvey, who was just the presence, and the entire stadium was rooting somebody's name, and to feel that 40,000 people, and it's just baseball, but you know, it's something. It's 40,000 people all feeling the same thing and cheering the same thing, and like, you are a part of that's epic to me. That was beautiful. And I'm glad that I got to feel that once with my team. I'm glad the Cubs won, you know, after 100 something years, and broke that. I mean, there's entire people lived their entire lives and didn't see that, and it's a change, and it's hope, and now they'll be the Yankees. Nobody will beat them. And I learned to appreciate the great moments, but they are just moments that will fade, leaving a burning warmth of memory in my heart when I think of the joy it provides me. That's when I kept going back to love, and I'd ask, what is love? I'd just say, baby, don't hurt me no more, because the Sade song. So I was like, maybe I should stop asking that question for this whole thing. And then after Dorothy said, we should have just picked a person, but I think you'll be okay with my Mets topic. But that warmth, that is true. Like, that is, I love that feeling. It's beautiful. And I'm glad I can keep tapping into love. So maybe I just love spring, and maybe I just love time with my sons. And maybe I just love lounging on the couch for 3.5 hours at night sometimes, letting my brain detox, and just simple sport that you can walk away from and come back. And maybe I just love the memories of my dad, who lives in England. I don't get to see him often, but, you know, we talk about the good stuff, the important stuff too, but it's nice to see those Mets, you know, still there. Maybe I just use the Mets as a medium for creating good memories. So thank you for allowing me to do this, and it's my pleasure.
Morning. I too came up with a different twist as far as what is love. And Kevin has a little photo album that I put together. Back in January, when I took time off from work getting much needed rest, I was beyond exhausted, but something made me see the unconditional love that was always there surrounding me, but I never fully acknowledged it. And many of us have the same type of love as well and never gave it the recognition that it deserves. And I'm talking about my pets, my four-legged family members, my fur babies. Looking back during that week, I realized that each of them gave love and lessons to me and my family. So I'll just go through and tell you a little bit about each of them and what the lesson had been. My first story is about a lesson of faith and prayer. About 16 years ago, I just separated from my son's father, and my kids and I were about 3 to 4 weeks into living into our new home, and I decided to surprise them by adopting 2 older cats. These cats were living at PetSmart for the longest, and my youngest son took an absolute love to one of these cats named Sylvester. So I went and adopted Sylvester, and then I felt guilty leaving Satchmo, so I brought Satchmo along too. So we have Satchmo and Sylvester. They were with us for about maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks, and one night they got out the front. One went out the front door, one went out the back door. It was a dark, rainy night. My kids were in tears. Their ages were about 7 and 17. They're 10 years apart. So we're out there in the torrential rain looking for these cats and couldn't find them. So we come back into the house, and both kids were upset, but I was really taken back at the reaction of my 17-year-old. You know, he was just showing just pure, raw emotion. So it was an opportunity just to talk about faith and prayer. And we prayed that they would come back, and we prayed for their safety, and the boys went off to their rooms. And it was just sad. I can hear them, you know, crying and praying, and I'm in bed and I'm crying and praying, and I'm like, you could just hear the rain coming down. And I felt that I needed to do something. So I went to the litter box and scooped out some cat poop and a little bit of food and left it outside the front door. And I'm thinking, at least I'm trying something. About 3 o'clock in the morning, something woke me up, opened the front door, and both of them were sitting right there. So now I'm like frozen. I didn't want to startle them. And I tried to coax them in, but they just sat there. The rain stopped a little bit, but it was still coming down. So I ran and got the boys, And it was like the cats were waiting for the boys to go get them and bring them in the house. And that, to me, was just a lesson in faith, you know? Was it prayer? Was it faith? Or was it a coincidence? To us, it was faith and prayer. Satchmo and Sylvester lived out their lives with us for the next 8 or 9 years. Satchmo went first. And Sylvester actually disappeared for a year. We thought maybe he just went off to die in the woods. Turned out my neighbor kidnapped him. And he just came walking back like nothing. And we weren't quite sure if it was him, because he lost a little weight. Of course, he was older. And we brought him in the house, and the true tale sign that it was him was the reaction between him and my dog, Roxy. They were buddies. So somewhere in that photo album going around, you'll see when they first reunited, it was amazing. Sylvester, when he came back home, I think he just came home to die, because he was with us for about a few months and just peacefully passed, and he was probably like 17, 18 years old at that time. So my next story is about Roxy, who was my St. Bernard. She taught me strength, independence, power, and being a little bit of a diva, because she was. She was my first and only store-bought animal. All of my other animals were rescues. She was a true ham. She gave us much laughter. But as she got older, she became very protective of us and family and the other animals. She was a powerhouse. She was very independent, didn't listen to anybody, but she kind of stood in her strength. She was a good dog, but family and first came first. Family and home came first, and that's one lesson I'm still trying to learn, to have that balance and sometimes put you first. My next animal is William. He is nothing but pure love and peace. Sweet William is his official name. There isn't enough time to explain all that he is. But after a year or so after I got Roxy, I was looking for a smaller dog for Tyler. He wanted a dog that he can walk, and Roxy just would drag him all over the place. So I mentioned this to my local dog pound lady. And she said, I have the perfect dog for you. He's a pit bull. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think so, because you heard the stigma about pit bulls. I really had no choice. She came over many times doing home visits, play dates with him and Roxy. And she just said, I cannot give this dog to anybody else. She knew me. She knew my kid. She's like, you would give this dog the perfect home. So we brought William in, and he was the perfect fit. His personality was that of like a 5-year-old boy, kind of goofy and loving and just sweet-natured. He was great with the kids. And pretty soon everybody got to know him in town. They're always asking for him. The vet's office loves him. They wanted me to certify him as a therapy dog. I just never had the time to do it. The first day of the opening of our dog park, I took William, and Tyler was holding him on his leash, and we took 2 steps into the dog park, and 2 dogs immediately ran up to him, because it's a double-gated thing, and I didn't even get a chance to take his leash off yet when these 2 dogs viciously attacked him. So I had to push Tyler out of the way, because now I'm like, this is going to be real ugly. This poor baby didn't even fight back. He just waited for the humans to come and rescue him. And it seemed like hours that this attack took place. But during it, again, his personality was just so nonviolent. Even being attacked, he just waited for somebody to help him. And afterwards, he was still kind of smiling and wagging his tail. And, you know, I had to take him to the vet. And it was just a lesson that, I guess, for him, was trusting that the humans would just be there to protect him. And even in the midst of being attacked, he didn't fight back. William is now about 12 or 14 years old. He's an old man. We know that he is also coming to the end of his life, but he will always hold a special spot in everybody's heart that has come across him. Sometimes I would bring him to work with me. You know that I work at an assisted living. And in the beginning, I thought, you know, the stigma of him being a pit bull would, you know, turn people off, but they all love him. He's just getting too old to get in and out of the car. But he brings love and joy to everybody that he meets. Next is Angie. Angie has shown us that there's no place like home, and sometimes you have to search for your special place and to feel comfortable with the ones that you want to surround yourself with. She is technically my grand dog. And again, she found us. She belonged to my neighbor. And my neighbor inherited this dog and two boys from her friend who had passed away. So Angie was probably maybe 7-8 months when she came to live next door and did not like that house. She would always just break out and roam the neighborhood. She would also often come to my yard and play with Roxy. My oldest son, Sean, had moved out of the house around this time, and there was something about him that she was gravitated to. She knew the sound of his truck. He could be coming down the block, and she would appear out of nowhere and just want to be with him, jumping in his truck. So finally, he went to the neighbors and said, look, this dog is here at my mom's house all the time. Can I just take her? And they said, yeah. So he took her. He got her fixed. She had Lyme's disease. She was treated, and she was fine. He is her person. But again, Sean at that time was, I don't know, middle 20s. So I would get that phone call, Mom, can you go let Angie out? Mom, I'm working late. Can you walk the dog? So, of course, Angie started coming to my house, and the rest is history. I must say this dog is like my dog. She's my person. She brings me nothing but joy and comfort. To me, she's like that warm blanket, that nice cup of tea, chicken noodle soup, anything that you can think of that brings you comfort. She is that to me. She's become the alpha dog of the house since Angie passed. And some of you that see my Facebook post will see that. She lets the other two dogs know that she is definitely in control. It's funny, sometimes when they're eating, she'll lay across everybody else's food bowl or water, and they'll just back off. And she's just doing it just to say, I'm the boss, you can't come near me. But it's funny, all the different personalities that they have. Last but not least is Shelby. Shelby, I adopted her for work. Again, I work at an assisted living, and one of their signature things is to have a community dog. So I was looking for a small lap dog. So I went back to my dog pound lady, and she said, I have the perfect dog for you. She's a little Sheltie. She's young. She's a little shy, but because she's young, she would adapt to this environment. So I had the opportunity, again, to do several visits with her to and from work. She's very timid and very skittish, but she did kind of fit into the small memory care unit, except she bonded to me right away, kind of like you hear the baby duck imprints on the mama duck. I am her mama duck. And she's by my side 24/7. And for me, it's just overwhelming to have some living thing love and adore you that much. It was to the point when I would leave at night or for the weekend, I would just feel so guilty leaving her. And a few months after we brought her there, I was promoted and moved up to the assisted living part of the community. And Shelby found a way to get into the elevator, get off on the main floor, and then take the staircase up to my office. So with that, she knew, and the memory unit is a secure unit, so there's a code to get out. So she knew to wait until the door opened, and she would shoot in the far end of the elevator because the door closes quickly, so you're trying to keep the door open with a foot and grab her. And she would make it up the steps. So with that, we were afraid that she was going to go out the front door because she knew my comings and goings. Long story short, I ended up bringing her home, so she goes back and forth to work with me every day. Getting back to the beginning of my story in January and what made me think of their love for me is because during that week, I was really just so exhausted. I think I slept for 5 days straight. I had to like pinch myself to make sure I was still alive. But those dogs were by my side the entire time. And even though their needs were being neglected a little bit because I wasn't up and about, you know, they would wake me up and it's like, oh, okay, potty time, and I would let them out, but they never left my side. And it just showed me that love has no boundaries between species. So thank you.
Consult with my historian. We had Mimi before we got Molly, did we? No, we got Molly and then we got Mimi. Okay. My daughter is an animal lover. She went to school for ecology and green, and she started work at the Nature of Things near Ossining, where she brought around different species to preschool kids and whatever to introduce them to animals. So I was feeling kind of stressed at the time, but she heard about this family of cats. You know, I trained in family systems, so she reported the family was dysfunctional. One of the kittens got run over by a truck in the road. So they tried to call me, they said, but I came home and she brought home this little kitten who could just about climb underneath the door. So kitten was too young, you know, to be weaned from its mother. They were, my wife and my daughter were feeding it with a little bottle and eventually, he was just meowing and making a lot of noise. And she was carrying around, and a Bob Marley record came on. And when that happened, the kitten quieted down. So the kitten got the name Marley. So he had Marley for a while. And Molly turned out to be diabetic. So about every 6 weeks, for $80, I would go to a pharmacy in Ossining to get insulin and give him two shots. And one of the women where I went into in the pharmacy to pick up the insulin, she said, if I'm reincarnated, I want to come to your house as a pet. Molly died. And we at that time had gotten another cat. I have an ex-racquetball buddy who's also my podiatrist. And his son had a cat in the basement all day. sort of like Kathy's son. He was a young single guy, and he was away a lot, and the basement window was even too high for this cat to get up to. And so Peter's girlfriend approached Judy and said, "You got to take this cat. This cat has got a miserable life locked in the basement." So her given name is Mia. For me, it sounds too European, and I call her Mimi. So we've got Mimi in the house. Molly has died, and we're feeling, after 8-9 months, a little uncomfortable. Should we get another cat, whatever? And I go to Verizon to get my phone fixed, and there's an alarm off in there. And I figured, all right, you know, I'll go and I'll get a manicure down the line till the firemen get out of the Verizon store. And as I pass a pet shop, this gray kitten gets up on a scratching post and puts his paws up on the window, like, come play with me. So I guess you could say that shadow picked me. I'm kind of a physical guy, and one of the things that touches my heart is that maybe the first thing in the morning, but if not soon after that, Shadow doesn't that much like to be handled. But he gets up in the window. He gets up on my wife's dresser, so I open the window. He gets in the window against the screen, and I brush him. And we have a brushing session, which does my heart good. I think it's very therapeutic for the both of us. I tell him how handsome he is and what a beautiful boy he is. And whenever I talk to him and speak in sort of a loving tone, he does a cutesy roll. He turns over and shows me his belly. When he senses that my tone is affectionate. He is also a napping pal. If I get on the bed to nap, he doesn't want me to nap alone, so he gets up on the bed and naps with me. And anywhere in the house I'm doing something, all of a sudden I've got a companion. I've got Shadow Home Companion. We've got some difficulty with a bird feeder, and I was cutting a patch so it doesn't spill out. And I look up, and about a foot and a half away, Shadow is there intensely watching what I'm doing. Everything is his business, his noses and everything. He's got many personalities. You approach him and he does a Halloween cat. You walk up and down the stairs, he also does Kato. He hides behind the curtain, and as you pass him, he jumps out and attacks your leg. Every once in a while, he runs through the house about 40 miles an hour, called the Silver Streak. Sometimes I like to call him Murray, but Judy thinks that doesn't really fit. Yiddish is a Moshe Pupik, is a term of endearment. Literally, it means Mara's stomach, but it's just a loving term. So he is a godsend. He brings a lot of joy and happiness to the house. He's very gratifying. I pick up a hair tie on the street sometime, I wash it and give it to him. He plays with it for 20, 25 minutes. There's also a bit of a rip. An Italian, that's a scotch. Gets up on the window and hangs from Judy's Venetian blinds, custom Venetian blinds, goes after the spider plant. I say, what a boy, what a boy. So that's about it for my guy. On the animal blessing, I'm going to try and get a picture on my laptop, so Josh will help me so you can Technicolor see Shadow. If you're curious, and you approached me gently during the coffee, how I can show you shadow on my iPhone, smaller picture. Thanks.
Okay, does everybody here know who Ingrid is? She's the beautiful lady with blonde hair, and Ingrid Smith. So that is who I am reading for this morning. She had a family emergency, and this is her contribution to the Love Service. I am sorry I cannot be there due to a family emergency. I am writing this instead. My cat ran away last weekend. We are heartbroken, and we miss him so much, and he has not come back. I have been upset all week, have told very few people because I am so upset, but then some interesting things happened. A nanny of a child I treated called me Tuesday and told me she had a gift for all the kindness I had shown to her and the child she works with. She had made me a hug blanket, and I met her to give it to me. It is gorgeous, double Afghan, and it came at just the right time when I'm feeling so bad. I love it, and I love her for giving it to me. On Wednesday, at our weekly staff meeting, my boss had a very serious expression on her face, and I thought there was a problem. Then she said, "I want all of you to know about all the work the senior therapists have been doing these past few weeks, and I want to show them my appreciation." She had gift bags for me and the other two senior therapists. It meant so much to me, and I have been increasingly overwhelmed with the kindness of people. My intern had her last week, this week, and had flowers not only for me, but for all of the other therapists and professionals who had helped her during her 3 months with us. She's a lovely person, and we were all touched by her thoughtfulness. I helped another therapist at work for a little thing, and she later brought me chocolates. The best thing was, on the day the cat went missing, my husband drove down to North Shore Animal League before he went to work to try to find a new cat for us. He didn't find anything that he thought would fit well with our menagerie, so he drove back to North Shore on Tuesday after work and adopted an 8-week-old black kitten. He is sweet, affectionate, had worked out so well with our family, including the four-legged ones, and has brought us so many smiles and so much wholeness to our fractured little family. So the moral of my week is, love can come to you when you most need it in many different ways, but it can come. I am amazed by the love that came to me when few people knew about what was going on and when I needed it most.
You know, I'm testing. I'm so touched by the stories here, so wonderful, and we have such a bond with non-human beings, and it's so special, and we really don't have a monopoly on these feelings as humans. It's not patented, it's not us, it's not just us, but so thank you so much for that. Today I'd like to talk about someone who's really influenced me tremendously, of who started out as a staff person who I supervised 25 years ago. But she really supervised me. I didn't know that at the time, but she was the boss. Her name is Marie Roberts. She's 95 years old. She's still with us. She came out of the hospital yesterday, but if I did a little convincing, she probably would have pushed herself to be here, but I don't think that would have been a good move. And right out of the hospital, what is she doing? She's saying, "George, I'm not selling enough tickets for a fundraiser at the Theodore D. Young Community Center." Not a complaint about what she went through. She was in rehab for 2 months over in White Plains. but thinking about other people. And when I try to think about where I've come from, I always ask, what would Marie do? So I met her 25 years ago at the Theodore D. Young Community Center, which was formerly the Fairview Greenberg Community Center in Greenberg. And I was transferred there, and it was quite an experience. Didn't know anyone. Some people had some misgivings about why I was there, if I was someone to look over or spy on people. It was nonsense. But the bond between me and the seniors grew, particularly Marie. Now, Marie was the outreach worker. And the job description and what she did never matched, and that was a good thing. I wasn't sure of it at the time. So if someone needed to see their doctor and they had no way to get there, call Marie. If someone needed to vote, didn't have a way to get there, Marie was there. If someone was being mistreated in a nursing home, God forbid, Marie heard about it, and that was going to get straightened out. She was not going to leave. And I never fully, I don't know if I should say appreciated, but I never was quite sure of what she did. So I spent the day with her early on. I said, Marie, I just want to see what you do. And you have all this energy. So she went to Ruth Taylor, and one of the seniors who attended our program was in hospice care. They didn't have time left. And Marie did her prayers. And she never read prayers. They were from here. They were spontaneous. They were not from any particular faith. And that person felt better. And they knew it was from here. And then I said, and then we were done. And I said, Marie, where are we going next? Westchester Medical. We are? Yeah, there's some other people I need to see. Okay. So we saw them, and they were not in great shape, but when she walked into the room, they felt better. They just sensed that positive energy. And, you know, she always had health problems, so this was not an easy thing for her. And then I asked again, okay, where are we going now? Well, we're going to Hebrew Home for the Age. And I'm like, oh, my God. And, you know, so endless energy. So a lot of us would be so tired, and it's draining because you're seeing people in need, you're seeing people that sometimes are on the last chapter, and this is what she did. She was terrific. So, you know, I kid with her today. I said, you know, when I do the chaplain work right here, when I take you with me and you are a guide to me to this day. And when people say, well, what training did you have? And yeah, I had some training at Hudson Valley Hospital. But you know, Marie, it was you. And I know she's going to listen to this. And she's going to be angry with me because she's very modest. And she said, George, why did you put that out there? But I said, you know what? You're going to have to forgive me on this one because I think I want to share your story because it's a good story. And I would say that the most significant thing that happened, the occurrence, is that we had a Martin Luther King breakfast, and through a set of unfortunate circumstances, that was canceled for a number of years. And I talked to Marie, and I said, you know, I'd like to bring that back. Can we do that? And if I could help coordinate it or be a part of it, I'm not looking to be at the forefront. I like to see that happen, and that needs to come back. And she said, you know what, we're going to do it, but it's going to be you emceeing. And I said, Marie, that's not the plan. I wasn't looking for that. I just wanted to see this happen. And she said, nope. And you know, Marie always won the last word. You're doing it. That's it. Get up there. You'll be fine. I said, well, you know, I'm kind of new here. And I, you sure? You're doing it. You're the bright person. And to me, she's been a guide because when I didn't have enough, maybe I didn't have enough confidence in certain things to do this, she encouraged me and she saw something in me that I didn't see at the time. And to me, that's a very special person when you could recognize qualities and you are better. What is love, really? It's when you're with someone and you're better off for knowing them, that they are a positive influence. And what is it? It's all about her. My empathy classes. It's Marie, compassion, the wonderful compassion you have for your non-human beings. That's Marie. So can't say enough good things about her. When she retired, you hardly knew, because she was still visiting people, still taking people to the voting booth, still making sure that if anyone had a complaint about their doctor, she would sit in the doctor's office, put the phone down, we need to get this straight, and what's going on? And she was, even though she was like 90 years old, she was very intimidating, but it wasn't based on this, it was, are you treating that person the way you want to be treated? Would this be okay for you? It's not. What are we going to, and then she's not going to leave until, well, what are you going to do to make it better? This person isn't breathing right. Well, we'll get to it. No, I'm not leaving until we have something definitive. None of this, we'll see, I'll take care of it, I'll get back to you. So she was a great advocate, and again, really tried to live up to her life. Her life is not, it's not about material things or the car or the house or this, but it's how she treated other people and how she made other people feel in her presence. So Marie, God bless you. Watching, I hope you're not too mad, but I was hoping at the end of the service we can take a picture so we could say, hello, Marie. Thank you very much. Marie Roberts.
Hi again. This is such a wealth of blessings here to have five actual presentations as opposed to sometimes we go online and find readings for us to participate in. So thank you, all of you, for preparing and presenting today. When we had planned this back in February, I was also given a poem that Bill Hart had found that he wanted read as part of the service, and it's by the playwright Tennessee Williams. It says, the world is violent and mercurial. It will have its way with you. We are saved only by love, love for each other, and the love that we pour into the art we feel compelled to share. Being a parent, being a writer, being a painter, being a friend. We live in a perpetually burning building, and what we must save from it all the time is love. All right, one of the readings that we did find that we wanted to do involves something that I hope you guys will all enjoy. This is a communion apropos of Valentine's Day. This was a communion written by the Reverend Saren Movius Schuer, who's from the UUA Pacific region. In the movie by the same name, Forrest Gump says, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. Is that true of love as well, that you never know what you're going to get? Well, life is full of surprises, and love can be as well. Like love, chocolate comes in many forms. The confection we usually think of as chocolate is processed cocoa beans mixed with some kind of fat and some kind of sugar. How much fat and how much sugar and whatever else they add determines a lot about what it tastes like. Have you ever tasted unsweetened baking chocolate? It's really bitter. Eating it isn't a pleasant experience for most. I can think of one exception. Bittersweet chocolate, on the other hand, is made just of cocoa beans, cocoa butter, and sugar. The cocoa content is often about 70%, and the flavor is kind of complicated. It has a pleasant sweetness of fine chocolate, but it's not very sweet. It can be hard to eat too much of it because the bitter starts to show through. Milk chocolate has more sugar and less cocoa than the bittersweet. There's no bitter aftertaste, so it's easy to eat, but after a while, it can start to get cloying in its sweetness. Chocolate can disappoint. Think about the mass-produced, inexpensive chocolate in coins and Easter bunnies. You see them and say, wow, chocolate! And then you take a bite, and there are so many additives, so much partially hydrogenated soybean oil, and the taste of chocolate is just not there. Sometimes we keep eating it, thinking that it must be good because it's chocolate, but it never works. I think love can be like that. Not everyone has the same needs in terms of love. Just as some of us like the 70% cocoa content, while others like the 35%, and there are even those who like white chocolate. There's a wide variety of tastes in what we look for in a loving relationship. Apologies, I know we're supposed to be inclusive. I shouldn't be dissing the white chocolate people. It's pretty. Sorry, George. Some folks want excitement while others want comfort. And sometimes we don't get what we want, but we're lucky if we get what we need. In terms of eros and excitement, is it love or is it just a good time? The key to living in compassion and respect is to know what you seek. And if you enter a relationship, make sure that you know what the other person seeks. In a moment, we are going to take part in a chocolate communion. We honor diversity in taste, so we have different flavors. We have milk chocolate and we have dark chocolate. And we were going to add a couple of nuts, but I think we have enough just in personalities. We don't need to add it into our chocolate. Is what here? So, if you like, please take a chocolate from the dish as it passes by, but wait before you unwrap and eat your chocolate. We're going to do a little chocolate meditation together. So we have some dark chocolates. We have some milk chocolates. We've got a few fair trade. Not as many as I would like, but budget is what it is. And for those who don't know, there's a lot of backstory on chocolate and the ethical chocolates out there. And so I will let those go around. While those go around, I'm going to throw in a poem that I had wanted to read. Ah, did I leave it over there? Just a quick digression, because this is one of my favorite poems. This is One Perfect Rose by Dorothy Parker. A single flower he sent me since we met. All tenderly his messenger he chose. Deep-hearted, pure, with scented dew still wet. One perfect rose. I know the language of flower. My fragile leaves, it said, his heart enclose. Long, love long has taken for his amulet one perfect rose. Why is it no one ever sent yet one perfect limousine, do you suppose? Oh no, just my luck to get one perfect rose. Anyway, back to our chocolate communion. Does everyone have the one of the chocolates who wants a chocolate? Okay. All right, now I want you all to unwrap your chocolates. Oh, they're not already yet? I'm sorry, was I not hearing? I'm not, I see the basket's still going around. I can't believe these are still going. Ah, I killed it. I know. That was from Margaret's service. That was from the bee service. That's still here. Yeah, it's starting to. It's got its pollen. Okay. Now, does everyone have a chocolate who wants a chocolate? Okay. So I hope no one has eaten it yet. But if you have, don't worry about it. All right, I want everyone to unwrap your chocolate and hold it in your hand. Look at the color. Smell the aroma. Is it melting in your hand? Is your mouth watering? Okay, now take your chocolate, and rather than put the whole thing in your mouth, just bite off a tiny little bit and let it dissolve slowly without chewing. Notice the taste, the sweetness. Notice any other flavors that are present in your chocolate. Notice how you feel when you eat the chocolate. Is this a flavor associated with any memories? So when you're ready, go ahead and finish your chocolate any way you want to. You can continue to nibble at the edges, or you can pop the whole thing in your mouth, or something in between. And when your chocolate is gone, how do you feel? Yes, love is like a box of chocolates. Both can involve some choice and some risk. Love and chocolate can bring you joy, but can also be kind of messy. Different people have different tastes and different desires, but know that your love and your life are honored here, and that you are loved. And may you carry that love out into the world.